Paddy Hirsch has spent years covering Wall Street as an analyst and a journalist. He's now editor of NPR's Planet Money Indicator. So perhaps it's not surprising that Wall Street is the subject of his new novel. Not today's Wall Street, but Wall Street in the year 1799 in a New York City that is just emerging as a financial center for the brand new United States. The book is called The Devil's Half Mile, and Paddy Hirsch joins us now from New York. Paddy, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.
And by the way, you and I know each other very well because we were working together at Marketplace. You were my editor at Marketplace when I was covering Wall Street. But we'll talk about that later because we'll first talk about your book. Why Wall Street in the 1700s?
Well, I wrote a book a bunch of years ago called Man vs. Markets, which was an explainer of the financial markets. And I wanted to write a follow-up to it, which was really talking about how markets are created. And I wanted to write a book about the creation of the New York Stock Exchange. So I started, you know, doing a lot of research and doing a little bit of writing. And then I realized that it was really all research and reading letters by Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr, and all these types of people. And, you know, going to the New York Library and paging through dusty tomes. Hmm. And it just became so dull that I kind of, just to keep my hand in on the writing side, I wrote a little bit of a murder mystery into the narrative. And that kind of sidebar project really just took over the whole thing and ate it all up. And now the nonfiction project is in a dusty drawer somewhere. And here we are with a fiction project instead.
How difficult was it to figure out what things were like on Wall Street in the 1700s?
Actually, relatively easy. I mean, once you'd got over the hump of getting into the library and really sort of going through all of those books and those archives, there's actually quite a lot of documented material out there. There's a lot of painting, which is great, and a lot of letters and sort of historical accounts that talk about what life was like back then. And of course, the history of the New York Stock Exchange itself, with this Buttonwood Agreement that was signed in 1792 on May the 17th, when you had 24 people got together under a Buttonwood tree to sort of create the origins of the New York Stock Exchange, that's been very well documented. So there's a lot of information out there. You've got to go hunting a little bit, but it's all there.
Well, and you mentioned that some of it was boring as you were looking through it, but then threw in a murder mystery into the book. Yeah. I mean, it reminded me of the fact that, you know, when you cover business news, when you cover financial news, you do have to find ways to make it a little more interesting or it will be very dry.
That's right. And if you're looking back, you know, however many hundred years, because you can't speak to a person. Anyway, when we do financial and economics reporting now, we can speak to a person to ask them how they're affected by something. Of course, we can't do that now. So you've got to find personalities who existed, you know, in 1792 and those, or 1799 in the case of my book. And those people, of course, don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell those stories. So I felt it was kind of easier to make one up and sort of tell the story that way.
Well, and your main character is Justice, or Justy, who has been away from New York for a few years. His family is Irish. People can obviously hear your accent. I will tell them that you're actually from Northern Ireland, not the Republic of Ireland. But but he's Irish and went to Ireland to train as a lawyer. And at the beginning of the book, he returns to New York. Were there a lot of Irish immigrants working on Wall Street at that time?
Working on Wall Street? No. Working in New York? Yes. Because although you hadn't had the huge waves of Irish immigration that you saw in the 1850s and 60s because of the famine, you still had a lot of Irish that had come across, attracted to America so that they could escape the oppression of the British in Ireland because they were brutally oppressed. And they came to New York and they found that they really just exchanged one oppression for another, because although the oppression was no longer physical and they weren't essentially indentured servants or essentially slaves as they were in Ireland, when they arrived in New York, they found they were absolutely second-class citizens. Because they were Catholics, they were discriminated against strongly by the Anglican-type Protestants in New York. And because they were Irish, they were kind of regarded as subhuman by the English, who still dominated New York society then, even after the Revolutionary War.
In your book, you refer to the financial panic that took place in 1792. What happened there and how did it compare to maybe what we saw in 2008?
Well, there are a lot of similarities. I mean, what happened was in 1792, Alexander Hamilton had created what he called the Bank of the United States, what was called the Bank of the United States, which was in a way the first kind of government bank. Mm-hmm. And in order to make that bank popular, in order to sell its shares, he created this interesting system where you had to buy some of the shares in cash And then you had to use government bonds to buy the shares. So it was this weird system. But what it essentially did is it juiced the market for government bonds, which is what Hamilton wanted to do. And this one speculator called William Duer, whose name appears in the book, mm-hmm. and is kind of a central character, if not actually alive at the time, he tried to corner the market in these government securities and leveraged himself up like crazy, borrowed money from everybody in order to do that. Unfortunately, the market in those bonds collapsed. It dropped about 20%, but that was enough to put him out of business and make him bankrupt. And when that happened, he made a lot of other people very, very nervous. A lot of people sort of were not able to, you know, redeem their loans. There was a run on the Bank of the United States, also a run on the Bank of New York. And credit dried up, not just in those two banks, but in all the regional banks as well. Does any of this sound familiar?
Yeah,
right. It was a lot like 2008. So you had a relatively small bank that actually had some problems that squeezed the entire banking industry. And Alexander Hamilton had to step in and actually do a number of things to create liquidity and shore up confidence in those banks. And he essentially created the first bailout. So there are a lot of similarities between 1792 and 2008.
Well, so does it make you think that everything that goes on Wall Street is cyclical and it just will keep happening over and over again, that even when we learn our lessons, we forget them?
It absolutely will, especially, and you look at the process of deregulation that we're going through right now. Well, I mean, and I think some of that deregulation is appropriate. I mean, Dodd-Frank was originally supposed to be, I think, 170 pages, and in the end was 2,300. Mm-hmm. So clearly that's a massively bloated bill, but they may go too far. And the generation of bankers that are getting into the chair now and will be there for the next 10 years, they won't remember what happened in 2008. So they're almost destined, almost doomed to make the same mistakes.
I don't want to give too much away, but there's a Ponzi scheme in your novel, which makes me think of the time that you and I were covering the Bernie Madoff situation in New York. He ran one of the largest Ponzi schemes in history and eventually went to jail for it. What made you want to put a Ponzi scheme into this book?
Well, I think the problem is there were no rules on Wall Street then. There was no regulation. It was all self-regulation. And in fact, in the wake of the panic of 1792, Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson had a conversation about whether or not they should actually put a framework of regulations around the burgeoning securities business. And they decided no. We're going to have self-regulation instead. And if you think of the context when America had just thrown off the shackles of the British government, it didn't want to have all of these rules and regulations. It wanted people to be free. It wanted self-determination. People could be responsible to look after themselves. And that's the argument that they made for not putting this framework around the securities markets. So come 1799, it's like, what rules were they that could be broken? Well, there really were no rules that could be broken. Pretty much anything was fair game. But cheating in a way that the Ponzi scheme cheated people, I think, was just so outrageous that it kind of stood out as if not a breaking the law, certainly breaking the spirit of the law. So that's why I use it. And also, frankly, a Ponzi scheme is relatively easy to understand, whereas, you know, complex, you know, financial securities and, you know, all the malarkey that goes on with those, that's tough to explain.
Well, maybe 300 years from now, somebody will write a book about credit default swaps with a murder mystery thrown in to spice it up a little.
My God, that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, right.
I can't wait.
So back to us, Patty, and you and I, as we said, we used to work together. You remember that?
I remember it very well. In fact, I remember one night, I think you called me at about 11:30 at night or something, and I was at a party somewhere. It was a Sunday night. And I think it was the news of AIG going down had just broken, and you were on the morning report the next day. And you were locked out of the office, as I recall. I think you were. It was raining, and you were sheltering under the awning of the Citibank building. And you said, can you brief me on how this AIG thing works? Because I haven't got internet access. I need to understand it. And I remember laying it out for you. And I was very impressed because you synthesized it in such an interesting way. And the next morning, you were on the air at, 3:30 or whatever it was. And you were able to just take that very, very complicated story, synthesize it and spit it out in a really, really simple way that everybody could understand. And I think that's what you and I as journalists, and in a way what I'm trying to do as a novelist, that's what we're about.
It's funny that you say that because I have told that story before too, but in a slightly different way. This is the way that I tell it. I say,
I wasn't drunk.
I called up my editor. I said, so AIG is failing. Do you want me to do this for tomorrow? And you said yes. And then I said, okay, just a quick question. What is AIG? So I guess we figured it out in the end. That's Patty Hirsch, whose new book is The Devil's Half Mile. Patty is a financial journalist. He's been working with NPR and Marketplace and is the editor of the Planet Money Indicator. Patty, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Jeremy, thanks for having me.